week on Timey-Wimey TV, Liz and Rudy explore Doctor Who's A Town Called Mercy and check out the untitled adventures of an inspector of space and time.
Hi. Hi, Internet. How are you today? Hi, this is Shannon Miller at Lizard on the Twitters.
And I'm Rudy Deshan at Rudy on Twitters, who's continues to be fascinated by Liz's very casual, friendly approach to intros to the show.
I'm trying to be friendly.
Are you trying to defeat expectations instead of this bombastic intro that people expect of a show covering time travel and Doctor Who?
Well, we have the theme music. It goes bum ba da bum ba ba da da, and then you know, I feel like that's a very exhausting 30 seconds of their lives for our listeners. So I like to ease them back in.
You like to sit them in the easy chair, give them a drink, blanket around their shoulders.
Yeah.
And say, hey, how you doing?
We're just
sorry about the guard dog outside this house.
We're just a couple friends hanging out and talking about Doctor Who, man. Come on, join the party. It's a good party.
It's a good party.
We have tea. we don't actually have tea this morning. We have water. It's very hot in Los Angeles.
Well, iced water. It is incredibly hot, but we're gonna struggle through.
Yes.
Despite various heat problems.
This may be a relatively short podcast because as soon as it's done, we can turn the air conditioning back on.
Yes. And so the Doctor Who, he went and he saved people.
The end.
See you all next time.
We want to start off this week with a very special shout out to a previous guest, hopefully a future guest, because we love us nothing more than some...
The once in future old man.
Old man Bushman.
That's right.
Jay Bushman, who when he's not complaining about Doctor Who, is a, transmedia expert par excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And he won himself an Emmy last night.
He did.
He and the team over at, Fourth Wall Studios, won a Emmy for Dirty Work and Rides.TV, and congratulations to them. And also, but most importantly, congratulations to Jay Bushman.
Yeah.
Who now has an Emmy.
Jay is an amazing writer, amazing creator, amazing friend to us.
Yeah.
Full of opinion and entertainment.
Yes.
And joy, even when he's being crotchety.
Yes. And now we get to put in, should we ever have to write a press release about this show, that we've had Academy Award nominees and Emmy winners on it.
That's true.
Where it's not at all reach. It is true facts.
I love how you actually turn that all back on to us, but okay.
Well, I'm bringing it back to the podcast as a segue.
The queen of segues.
Well,
final congrats to Jay.
Yes. Yay, Jay.
Yay, Jay.
Let's dive right into comments on last week's episode. We're doing these at the top now to differentiate them from comments on this week's episode.
Our live comments.
The comments that we get as we tweet out frantically in the mornings before we start recording. And we actually got a lot of good feedback from this week. I was going back to the first episode in this season, Asylum of the Daleks. Our good friend Grunk mentioned this week. So far, no one has considered that one reason Moffat introduced Daleks in human suits is so that he could have Oswin become a human Dalek companion.
Mm-hmm.
They did say they could access the memories of the human whenever they wanted. It wouldn't be the first time. And I love when people do this. I love when people reach into the past of Classic Who, and they find justification for their theories. In the Web Flash Adventure series of the Eighth Doctor, he had an android companion that looked and acted like the Master. Everything but the evil bits. So that's as we continue to wait and find out how they're going to bring back Oswin, and as we continue to wait and figure out what punishment one of us will bear for our questions about the casting, because we have a bet. If you didn't listen last week, we have a bet going.
A big bet.
Big bet. We don't even know it's so big, we don't even know what's going to happen when one person is proven right or wrong.
Yes, that's still up to you people to decide what's going to happen.
Yeah, we're still taking suggestions.
The funniest thing, every time a discussion is brought up about, like, what are the two sides again? People start debating what it's about, as opposed to like, no, please pick our punishment.
Yes. it's an important punishment. It's an important bet. Which is, sorry, the situation is Oswin going to be connected to the companion that Jenna Louise Coleman plays? in starting with the Christmas special. She's going to be connected to her, those two characters going to be connected by more than just a throwaway reference.
Yes.
I think that's the simplest way to put it.
Yeah, more, is there a connection to be a throwaway reference, or it turns out, no, it's going to tie back to the first episode of this micro half season?
Yeah. The fall season. BBC America's calling it the fall season.
Wait till we get to discussion about this. But anyway.
So, Frank Carver, in response to Greg's comment, pointed out that the Schalke Doctor is not usually considered canon. The crowded TARDIS of Peter Davison's Fifth Doctor included two dangerous companions, Carmelian, a shape-changing robot controlled by the Master, and Turlo, an alien posing as a British schoolboy who plots to kill the Doctor. So, I mean, I feel like I would be really interested in any shift in the dynamic of the Doctor hanging out with attractive young ladies who fancy him quite a bit. Like, so if the Doctor is traveling with the person who wants to kill him, that's definitely new. It's definitely not something we've seen already.
Yeah, like the long game played. Sometimes it's the Doctor who plays the long game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, it turns out I've been moving all these pieces in place to get at you.
Mm-hmm.
But usually within the context of an episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is almost like the opposite. Like, it'd be kind of interesting to see the villain playing a long game the Doctor hasn't really expected at the end.
We haven't had, like, a really crafty, like, I mean, I guess technically the silence counts, but, you know, there was something to be said for just having, like, the Master being, like, all mastery and, like, over the course of the season. Like, right. That was exciting.
Yeah.
Like, having, like, a really strong antagonist.
Yeah.
And I guess technically even, like, with Davros, like, there's at least something there.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see them do something here. Here's my suspicion, though. You know what? I'm saving it for the discussion. Okay. You guys have to stay and listen to this entire podcast before I give my opinion on anything.
Yes. Danger Shoes commented on our last week's episode, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, this may be the most wildest, most speculative idea I've ever had regarding how the actress who plays Oswin will manifest as his companion. What if he rescues her as a Dalek and brings her into a Tesselecta? I don't know.
Tesselecta?
There's an A at the end. A Tesselecta. Okay. And then lets her connect to the systems, etc., to become a human. It's either that or he rescues her from before the crash and therefore erases the episode. Which I would be okay with. No, that's mean. I didn't hate Asylum of the Daleks, but, you know.
No, I don't think, how could you? How could you hate Asylum of the Daleks?
It didn't have any dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Oh, you're actually ranking that one higher than the Silent of the Daleks.
I certainly enjoyed the dinosaurs on the spaceship.
That's true, except when the part when they died.
That was really sad.
That was sad.
But then that guy got punished with death. I shouldn't be happy about that. And also, Frank Carver made fun of the fact that we don't know how to say, or we had problems saying Cerulean.
Well, one of us did.
Yes. Well, I always forget their names. I just remember them as lizard people who I don't like. Though I've increased, as we get further and further
it's
away.
It's actually funny if you call them that. Lizard people who I don't like.
I'm racist against lizard people. No, but I'm not actually. I'm increasingly enjoying their presence. Like,
oh.
Mostly because they're not.
They're growing on you?
Well, it's more that.
You grew accustomed to the lizard faces.
I've been accustomed to the lizard faces.
I grew accustomed to the lizard faces.
Oh, God. We're just going to go. This is our tangent now. Sorry about this, people. But no, I feel like every step further we take away from that two-parter where they just sit inside the Earth and talk about whether humans are bad or not from the fifth season, which I'm blanking on the name of. Usually I'm better at this, but I did not enjoy that two-parter. And yet I've grown to enjoy the Ceruleans more and more as they've appeared.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because they appear in things like Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
So there was more discussion on a Facebook post that I made.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is the social media world we live in. A Twitter post that made it to my Facebook page that my other friends discussed on when I was mentioned the bet.
Oh, yeah.
And Jeff Elwell continued discussion there, joined by an old friend of mine, Brian Hogg, where they were discussing things like they're wondering if the event was time-locked. Meaning, not really sure what that meant.
Aren't most events usually time locked?
They've not really mentioned time locked in a while now. You know, and I'm wondering if they're just not talking
well, I feel
about
like,
that.
I feel like Doctor Who's always kind of taken the approach that you really can't go back and change the past.
Yeah.
Like you should avoid doing that. And the Doctor, in fact, actively avoids doing that.
Yeah, or tries to put things back to rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If things get screwed up by another time traveler, he fixes it.
That or if someone's not supposed to be there, like like an alien. Look at the Venetian episodes back in the first season, or Picasso, where it's like, well, you're not supposed to be there, Mr. Alien, so I'm going to remove you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even the Daleks helping out during during World War II, you know, there were Daleks, so he was obviously pissed off, though I thought he should cool down when the Daleks are offering you tea. But the greater issue is like, whoa, this is not supposed to happen in history at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the discussion, so Brian has the opinion that Brian's lady, Maddie, thinks that the Doctor will meet Oswin early in her time stream, having adventures with her knowing she's eventually going to die on the Dalek Asylum. This makes sense, but that would put two women in the Doctor's life where he knows when they're going to die and has to keep quiet about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm betting she was able to upload her consciousness to the TARDIS or a Dalek ship and will find a way to get herself into a new body like an Estine duplicate. And the thing about it now, her being on the TARDIS would make the lack of info on the Doctor or his ship make more sense in the Dinosaurs on a Spaceship episode. So basically, it's her, she's going around and has that control and ability to erase data or keep it on there.
I mean, if that was something that was carried out throughout the season, that'd be really cool.
But... Well, I think it is being carried out throughout the season. Then there's my speculation is Jeff's comment, but also my speculation is that maybe it's spoilers if you some haven't seen the new series yet. I'm going to just stop here because I'm not sure if he's giving spoilers for the future or for the past.
Yeah, let's avoid that.
Yeah. Sorry, Jeff. If you want to clarify whether your comment had any information about future episodes or not. I would gladly read it, but I'm not sure if what you're saying has something to do with some information that you know about.
Yeah. We got some good, Twitter feedback on the bet, which amused me. What the punishment should be for when one of us, increasingly I'm starting to think I might lose this bet, because I do really think it's just going to be a Freema situation, but, loser has to wash Honey Boo Boo's mother for a month, says Neuroman 42, which is not pleasant and also not physically possible. So that one I'm actually okay with existing. Charlie Flowers suggests the loser has to watch Daleks of Manhattan again and then write a Terra Nova fanfic episode. Oh. Hashtag torture.
Oh.
The first part is I would be really upset about having to watch Daleks of Manhattan again. I did not care for that episode. As people who've listened before may know. This episode is just all about episodes I didn't like. I'm sorry.
Are you even a fan of the show?
Nah, you know. I don't have a tattoo. And loser has to watch Past Perfect and write a 500-word positive review of it in long hand. I can't remember what Past Perfect is. Is that a classic Who? A Great Stone Face. I should double check that. It sounds suspiciously like something that might be classic Who. We'll look that up in a second. Meanwhile, got some nice comments from Doug Lubert's and Geektastic Nebula about how we're continuing to do this wonderful podcast. And Brian Binkley also points out he's very interested in checking out continuing the TV series, but is struggling with the fact that it is Canadian. So there may be semi-legal ways to watch it, but I think we're going to wait until it comes out on Sci-Fi, whenever that might be. Whenever that might be is a very big question now. They only just announced that they were picking it up at the end of August. So the question, we'll have to see if they save it for like later this fall or whenever they have a hole in their schedule. I don't know how Sci-Fi schedules things anymore.
Mm.
I just know that Alphas is on.
It's a D20. That they have.
They
roll it.
See what happens. We have anything else from last week?
I think it pretty much wraps up most of our comments.
We did have a lovely email from Frank Carver, because he had a very long theory about where everything's going. Point one, O'Sullivan insists with the idea of Amy, then the Doctor, being exposed to the Dalek nanos, but apparently does nothing with it. Add to this Amy's forgetfulness and Oswin's lack of knowledge that she is in a Dalek, and the Doctor's announcement that Dalek conversion is the obvious thing for them to do with a quote-unquote genius. Then consider the final TARDIS moment when he joins in with the Dalek chorus and spins in an echo of the splitting Dalek glimpsed by Amy when she was suffering conversion hallucinations. It's clear that the Doctors have gotten to the Doctor more than he may realize. Dinosaurs looks and feels like a lighthearted romp, but apart from the Amy waiting discussion, which is obviously setting up for the end of Amy, it has some slightly odd moments. The failure to give a value for the Doctor or recognize a TARDIS is surely also pretty valuable, and the casual way he sets up Solomon to be destroyed. If my theory is correct, both of these stem from the previous episode. It seems quite possible that the rest of the season might actually take place inside the Doctor's Dalek-enhanced imagination. The missing value is a hint that the external details come from the Dalek database, now without the Doctor, rather than the real universe, and the casual destruction of Solomon is a sign of the continuing Dalekization of the Doctor. That was a lot of words I just read. There's more to his theory, but that's the gist of it.
That's interesting. Because of stuff we've been seeing with the Doctors, a certain reoccurring themes and plot points people have been noticing, and in this, well, I mean, for three episodes, but they're there. So we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Going into the speculation.
Yes, because there are definitely hints of this within A Town Called Mercy.
Right.
But before we get to discussing A Town Called Mercy, it's important we mention that an untitled web series about...
There's an untitled web series.
Untitled web series, totally unconnected to anything that we've seen before.
Yes, it's about a space traveler.
Who
could also travel in time.
That's very exciting.
Yes.
We're being oblique here, but we are, of course, talking about the web series that is inspired by... and stars the person who played Inspector Spacetime on Community.
That's right.
Which, as you recall, is the Doctor Who analog? I feel like analogs, or whatever. Doctor Who parody is...
Yeah, satire.
Satire that, that the characters Troy and Abbott are very big fans of.
Right.
In the show. And the first episode of this untitled web series that may or may not be inspired by the thing is out, and they legally can't, not because of the BBC, but because of NBC, they can't legally call it Inspector Spacetime. But it's good.
Oh, you thought it was good.
I thought the production values were great.
Value was great.
I think the writing, I think it was a little. It's very long form.
Yeah,
but. I'm excited to see where it goes.
I'm willing to give it more time. I came away, and this is more of a larger thing, which is like I've been enjoying all the fan and community, and I mean like the literal community, not the actual show. You know, generation of ideas and thoughts and stuff in this in the series, and then suddenly to see it frozen by having it being made into a show, that felt kind of weird.
Well, I think like. But there are many incarnations of the Inspector. This is just one regeneration or how I don't know what the official Inspector Space Time term is, but I mean I hear what you're saying. Like there is an element of that, but at the same time, like I think having it be built around having it be built around that actor, I think makes it kind of feel. Acceptable because it's coming from the same place that it began.
Right.
And more importantly, the actor, I forgot to look up her name, but the actress playing Piper Tate.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful there. She was great.
Oh, yeah.
She was a perfect, perfect send up of the old, a classic Who companion.
Yeah, classic companion.
Well. But with a little touch of, oh, Doctor. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh, Inspector.
The attraction that's there.
Yes.
I enjoy personally all where he was explaining something, it was clear he wasn't explaining it. It was literally like timey-wimey,
yeah,
wobbly on an ongoing basis that you're just like very confused on.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for me, I was like, I kept going like, oh, you know, this is in my head.
Yeah.
You know, like it was a weird, it was just not, I wasn't blown away by it. I wasn't like so disheartened by it or like, mm-hmm. like, ah, it was terrible. But I was really like, oh, I need to see more of this before I can really land on judgment on it.
Well, fortunately, there will be more episodes.
Really?
Yes, thanks to Kickstarter.
Yes.
So yeah, it's worth checking out. We'd love to hear what you think of it. We'll have a link in this week's episode, and of course, you have fingers. You can Google.
Yes. By the way, it has a better beginning than the terrible masterpiece classic. Classics that they do nowadays. You're like, I'm Laura Linney, and you're watching this, and you're like, okay, why do you need to tell me that? I know, I'm here for a reason. Thanks, Laura.
What's weird, too, is that it pops up, like, on the Netflix, That's the posting. So, it's like, Laura Linney, what are you doing here?
I'm in my Netflix
place right now, my very happy Netflix place.
It's just so strange.
This is a total side note, but I had this really random experience. One night, like, BBC America used to, like, show things uncensored, and there was this one night where Clockwork Orange was on, and I've never been a huge fan of that movie, but I kind of felt compelled to watch it.
Right.
And I kind of popped in halfway through, and so they show everything uncensored. And they show everything uncensored, but they showed it with commercials. So coming back from every commercial break, there'd be like a very big, like, oh my God, don't watch this movie. It's got boobies and boobies and violence and rape in it. And then it would be followed by, I'm Chloe Sevigny, and this is BBC America. It was like every time there was like 20 seconds of screen time devoted to, oh my God, somebody's going to get raped in this next scene. Don't watch it. It's awful. And then I'm Chloe Sevigny.
That kind of makes sense. Given some of the stuff she's worked on in the past.
Oh my God, that's a terrible thing to say.
I'm just saying. It's like.
I'm pulling us out of that plane crash and pulling up on the nose. And let's go over to a town called Mercy, shall we?
It's a town called Mercy.
Yes.
Spoilers. Spoilers, partner.
That's probably the best we're gonna do today.
That's probably the best I can
do. It's very hot, people. It's very hot here.
Hot like a western town named Mercy.
Hate everything. Yeah. Hate the heat. I hate the heat so much. Sorry, but yes, but I don't hate A Town Called Mercy.
You do not hate A Town Called Mercy.
It seemed like a nice place to live. Let's get into it, shall we?
Let's get into it.
So there's this town called Mercy.
Yes.
The doctor goes there.
He does.
He's like, oh, hey, you have electricity. That's weird.
That is strange.
People make a big thing about how there's an alien doctor and they want to throw the, and there's a cyborg gun shooter looking for the alien doctor. So the town people are like, okay, great.
You're an alien doctor.
So they try to give him to the gunslinger. But then Ben Browder shows up. He's the sheriff.
Named Isaac.
Yes, and he saves Ben Browder. Ben Browder shows up and he saves the doctor and he brings him in. And
you know why? Because Ben Browder is awesome.
Yes. Ben Browder, and then the doctor figures out that Ben Browder knows who the actual alien doctor that the gunslinger wants to kill. And this gunslinger is, like, terrorizing the town and has a big Terminator cyborg eye and is scary.
Right.
And so the doctor's like, oh, you know who the alien doctor is. And it turns out to be this other alien doctor guy.
That's right.
Who helped the town through a cholera outbreak and installed electricity and seems like a very nice young man.
They love him.
Older man. Sorry, yeah. Not young man.
One thing to note.
Yeah.
The cyborg fires off warning shots on anybody who tries to leave town or enter town with food.
Right.
So the town is at some point going to starve.
Yes.
But
won't shoot at civilians.
Will not shoot at civilians, innocent civilians. Mm-hmm. Just contain them. His deal is, I want you guys to push this to reveal where this alien doctor's hiding among you.
Yeah. So. The doctor's like, well, we can't, we need to figure out what's going on. You know, we can't do that. So, you know, wow, that sentence got away from me. The doctor's like, oh, well, we can't hand over the alien doctor because he seems like a nice chap. So, we're going to figure out what's going on here. So the doctor goes out to the alien doctor's spaceship while Ben Browder and, Rory,
there's a slash fic being written about their time in the desert together.
Of course there is. It's already written, posted on fanfiction.net, and has 10 comments. I guarantee you. And I bet it contains a line like, Rory looked at the sheriff, thinking about how he so resembled that American chap on that sci-fi show he'd watched when he was younger. I bet you there's that line. If there isn't that line already,
off to write that fanfic.
No, I barely have time. No, who has time to write fan fiction? I barely have time to talk, do podcasts. So, you know, they're off distracting the gunslinger while the doctor finds the alien doctor's spaceship, mm-hmm. and discovers that the alien doctor is kind of a jerk.
Yeah. In fact, the doctor claimed, doctor claimed his spaceship had crashed when it clearly didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out that the alien doctor,
mm-hmm.
Cal... Or something like Jax.
Yeah, I mean, I have control because calling him the alien doctor.
Well, basically, he's a war criminal.
Right.
And basically ran away that the cyborg was one of his creations that's now hunting him down for justice's sake.
And, like, he claims that he and his fellow scientists created all the cyborgs to end the war quickly. But, you know, that doesn't mean a lot to the guy who got turned into a terrorizing cyborg.
That's right. And, the doctor's actually pretty horrified at all this and comes to the point where he wants to talk, but he actually literally pushes the other alien doctor out of the town and mm-hmm. says, you know, wants the gunslinger to come by and get him.
And points a gun at him.
Yeah. Points a gun at him, which is a huge thing for the doctor. And then Amy points a gun at the doctor.
Yes, and then the gunslinger just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna pardon my language. The gunslinger decides to,
shoot through the town.
Decides to shoot, the alien doctor anyway, and Ben Browder saves him at the last minute.
Well, takes the shot for him.
Takes the shot, yeah, basically.
And then leaving this episode Browderless for the last half of it.
Yeah, that was not cool. Cool episode.
And not at all cool episode. And obligates the doctor to be the new marshal of the town.
Right.
What's
the difference between a marshal and a sheriff?
Sheriff is an elected official. Marshall, I think it comes from the U.S. government.
You actually had the answer for that.
I'm pulling that out of my ass, but I'm just basing it on every trope I've seen out there.
Okay.
A sheriff is a role that's chosen by the people. Like, usually when we have sheriffs out here, it's always an elected position.
Yeah.
For the most part, or an appointed position on a town level. Marshall is usually someone from, had a greater jurisdiction, traditionally. Why he was not a sheriff, I do not know.
Rudy just dropped some knowledge on y'all. I hope you appreciate it.
Yeah. Made up knowledge, but whatever.
So, the doctor is the new marshal, because he's not an elected official. And Ben Browder just kind of pushes the star on him. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the doctor essentially then is like, okay, well, it's time to come up with a clever plan. And part of that clever plan does include telling the frightened citizens to not,
frightened.
Yes, and in fact, you know, trying to talk them out of shooting him and or the alien doctor. And then eventually, I'm not exactly sure what the plan was.
He said he had a Dr. House moment.
Yeah.
You know, when the alien doctor mentioned about, you know, I can't even recall what the line it was, and then suddenly our doctor is going, oh, yes. And then the plan essentially seemed was distract the cyborg.
Right.
Oh,
yes. Everyone has, basically, the cyborg gave an ultimatum that, like, turn over the alien doctor by noon or I start shooting everybody.
Right.
Because the cyborg wants vengeance for being turned into a cyborg.
Right.
Fair enough. I feel that, you know, that's a very believable character motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the doctor, cyborg scans people's faces for a very distinctive mark. So, of course, the doctor has everyone in the town paint their faces with that mark so the alien cyborg can't figure out which one is actually the alien doctor.
Right.
Of course, the whole thing was that he was going to kill all the townsfolk anyway, so this...
We'll get into that.
Yeah. Anywho, basically the alien doctor realizes that he, you know, he came to this town being nice to this town because he wanted to...
He wanted redemption.
He wanted redemption, but he's like, clearly I'm not redemptive enough and I'm just causing more misery, so then he goes and blows himself up in his spaceship.
Right.
And the cyborg becomes the new marshal, and Amy and Rory and... Amy and Rory are in this episode, by the way. But Amy and Rory and the doctor fly away, and...
In fact, with them going, hey, we'd like to go home now, please.
Yes.
Which, with the lovely line, we're worried about our neighbors noticing we're old, we're aging
faster. Our friends.
Our friends are aging faster than everyone else.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. The end.
The end.
Pluses!
Pluses! Matt Smith, as always.
Jeez Louise, Matt Smith.
Yeah, you know, we went through kind of through our summary, but there is like the major scene in this entire episode is when the doctor comes back after having learned about the war criminal's past,
right?
Learning that he is a war criminal, and that scene is, I'd say, the core and heart of the show, where the doctor is really infuriated, and you know, discussion comes up where. Everyone's like, well, we should give him over the fence, and then because he's a war criminal. But other people are like, well, he saved the town from cholera. And Amy goes like, yeah, we don't do that, though. Like, we don't do that. And the doctor completely kind of snaps after a snide remark from the war criminal doctor and basically drags him across town, gets the gun out, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, I was more struck by, like, how mad he was... After initially coming back, and in the sheriff's office, he's just shouting.
Yeah.
And it'd been a while since I think we've seen him have that kind of rage. And yeah. I think it was beautifully acted. The whole episode, I think, on his part was beautifully acted.
He's having, like, these episodes, he's been amazing at it.
And I've never not liked, I mean, it's never been like, Matt Smith will probably never be, quote unquote, my doctor. But I've never... Yeah, he's definitely, like, grown into the role so beautifully.
Right.
Since he started. And it's been a pleasure to watch that.
Yeah, he is Doctor Who.
Yeah. The character's name is not Doctor Who.
He is Doctor. He's the Doctor.
He is fully embodied.
Sorry, David Tennant.
He is fully embodied the Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and...
And did you notice that the remark about, like, oh, I'm 1,200 years now?
Yes, we've officially locked that down. So, So there's basically been 100 years between season 6 and season 7 for him. And that computes, they've certainly made sure to build in, like, oh yeah, he's just running around through time.
Right.
So, but now we have a new official age. He's probably over Rose at this point. let's see, I mean, I enjoyed a lot the Western touches really much. Jeez Louise, Liz. It's very hot here, people. It's very warm.
That's going to happen in 2 weeks. We don't have this heat wave anymore.
Well, we don't have Doctor Who to discuss.
Oh, heat wave. Keep it going. It's covering up our excuse here.
The Western touches were nice. Some of the music I felt was a little off.
Yeah.
Some of them, you know, but other times, like, it was like, oh, yeah, you're going to go for that. There was a very nice little touch where the doctor speaks horse. And yes. So borrows a transgendered horse named Susan.
Yeah. Well, I was like, what's their name? It's like Joshua. No, it's not. It's Susan. And he wishes you to respect his lifestyle choices. Like,
yes. Which is a lovely thing to say to an old timey preacher.
Yeah.
I really like the scene with the scared human where he's trying to talk down the mob, and he's just like, it's just about making sure that this kid, that, you know, this 18-year-old kid doesn't murder somebody.
Right.
And it beautifully capped off by the line, you know, frightened humans, give me a Dalek any day.
Yeah.
Because I think that is such a, that scene was so very hooey. Like,
it was. I just wish that it was a bit more intense. I mean, yeah. I felt the mob didn't feel very mobbish.
It was, yeah. It could have been amped up. I think, like, in general, the state, like, I, you know, you have a line,
yeah,
about how the food's been cut off, but, you know, a scene showing it would have actually given the stakes real meaning.
That was the thing. It was a lot of like I felt it much like a Western an old Hollywood Western set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this, the front of it was all there, but there was nothing behind it. So, like, you had someone say, oh, we're going to starve. Like, great. Why don't you show that little girl that was in the episode feeling, you know, like, walking around.
Yeah, if you're going to...
You know, asking someone for food or something like that.
Yeah, if they had asked them if they had food, like, Amy and Rory, if they had food on them. Like,
yeah.
Like, it was all dialogue as opposed to showing. Sorry, it's such a cliche thing to say. But, also, Ben Browder was in this episode. I don't know if that came up at all.
As a pro? No, of course, I'm just teasing you. Wow. The fangs came out there, folks.
But I'm always vaguely shocked by the fact that Ben Browder doesn't get more work, because I do think he is, at the very least, a very funny actor.
Oh, certainly. And, like, I was, like... this was my con. I was like, why'd you kill Ben Browder halfway through this episode?
Yes.
He was the most interesting character.
He
didn't play a cliche. Like, it had all the hallmarks of a cliched sheriff,
mm-hmm,
of a town. But what was really touching is you can tell he was a bit of a dope,
mm-hmm,
but still one of the smartest, like cleverest people in the town. He was just honest and good and whole.
Mm-hmm.
And had that rough edge to him. He was an American, like, cowboy.
Yeah, no.
And then it was like, and he died. And it was, and his death scene was terrible. It was not like terrible, like, oh, so tragic. It was terrible.
Like, acting wise, or?
Oh, it was just a cliche. Like,
oh, yeah.
Promise me you'll do this.
Yeah, no, that was.
Now that I fulfilled my role, I go away.
I think we've definitely segued into minuses at this stage. So I think we've been on more pluses.
Any other pluses just before we do that? I mean, I can't recall any other ones.
I mean, I didn't hate. I did like
the cyborg, the way it moved. I loved the kind of, like, instead of the traditional, like, chink,
mm-hmm,
chink, chink, when you hear, like, a cowboy coming up for the high noon.
Yeah.
It is that he has that weird warp effect that he's like even when you first introduced him, it was very chilling to see him coming towards when they push the doctor out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, some of the visuals are really, really great.
Yeah, and, you know, I think overall, like, it was they promised with this season that it was going to be, that at least with the very top of the season, that it was going to be...
Big budget,
entertaining hours of television. And yeah. I have to say, so far, they have really lived up to that.
Yeah, this one is my least favorite so far, so let's go into cons.
But I think, like, even, like, I will take a 10 episodes like this over one Silurian two-parter. So
it's a Silurian one-parter, you're totally for.
If that Silurian two-parter is dinosaurs on a spaceship, yeah, sure.
A one-parter.
Yeah.
So, like, cons.
Yes.
Where the hell is Amy in this episode?
I don't know. She showed up to do the moralizing thing, and then she then proceeded to look pretty.
I know. Seriously. I was like, what the?
I mean, they had to hang a lantern on the fact that Rory also was completely useless.
Yeah.
That's how useless he was. I'm glad that I still kind of have that instinctual, like, oh, those characters. I guess I still like those characters. But yeah, it's like, why are they there? Why are they there? Why did the doctor pick them up for an adventure? Why didn't they? This is speculation-y, but based on the trailer for next week, I am optimistic that some of this will come together,
mm-hmm,
but we'll see. Yeah. So, yeah, there were two people who were taking screen time that could have been spent on Ben Browder. and I wouldn't be upset about that normally, except that Ben Browder gets so little screen time. I nearly rewatched some Farscape last night just because I was like, oh, that's right, that sweet Ben Browder goodness. Put it directly in my vein.
But even outside of like they could have done more with other characters in the show,
mm-hmm,
it was just like, you know, the moralizing I get, but the problem is that you have two companions. They could have gone in with one. I don't know. And here's the other weird thing for me. They went through some great stakes in the, they spent a lot of time in the last two episodes explaining why Rory and Amy are here. You know, like, they're like, oh, the Daleks wanted them. And, oh, the Doctor...
Felt like having a gang.
You know?
At least, yeah, like, they didn't even bother with an explanation
this time. Yeah, we're here. He's going to take us to the Mexican Day event. They're like, maybe it was their anniversary. Like, nothing. Nothing. They're just like, we're just doing it. Now we're traveling the Doctor again.
Yeah, two lines of dialogue. It's all you freaking needed.
Yeah.
I mean, and I... Because it's that's what happens when you establish that your companions are not full-time companions. You need to justify their presence.
Right.
And that's fine. It's a new dynamic, and it's an interesting dynamic. But at the same time, like, you need to justify their presence.
Right.
Another thing I had an issue with, and this is going to kind of counter to something you said when we were talking about pluses, but as we've established, you and I hate the Doctor's Daughter. I hate that episode so very much. I hate that episode so much, I need to say it one more time. I really hate the Doctor's Daughter.
You don't like the fish-headed soldiers?
Actually, the fish-headed soldiers are fine. It's just the whole, like, I started an episode saying clones are not kids show. Like, you don't clone somebody and have them come out blonde, inexplicably, and then, like, a blonde, pretty lady. A very blonde, pretty lady.
David Tennant certainly thought so.
So David Tennant certainly thought, ayo, that's not weird at all. always remember, people, the Doctor's Daughter who played the Doctor's Daughter had the Doctor's Daughter. Anywho, the point is, I will say about that episode, like, aside from the part where I'm just shouting at my TV every 5 minutes, clones are not kids! This is so effed up!
That's true.
Aside from that part, like, I will say that the ending of that episode where David Tennant does, like, freaking pull a gun on a dude and nearly kills a man, like, is honestly a really great moment. Like, it was awful. It was shocking and terrifying. And, like, I had a really strong visceral reaction, especially because the Doctor has had such a hard line on guns.
Right.
Up to that point. And I will say it bumped me pretty hard in this episode that Matt Smith's Doctor was much more casual about it. And I think, it's kind of unfortunately a situation where I was comparing the two scenes where the Doctor's pulling a gun on somebody, and David Tennant's was more intense and more terrifying because you honestly thought he could pull that trigger. And with Matt Smith, it was like, I've seen this and it's not as intense.
See, I will disagree with you there in saying that I felt the intensity. My problem was not when he pulled the gun out.
Right.
Actually, I did have some issues there, but not tied to a different Tennant moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the intensity I had an issue with. Is that thereafter, his hand is constantly floating over the gun rifle.
He does actually continue to... I see the boyishness of, like... I get the boyish, like, hey, I've got a gun strapped to my hip, like, six-shooter, fun times, whatever.
Yeah.
A quick draw McGraw. That's a sentence I just said, arguably.
Yeah.
You could argue that that's a sentence. But,
I won't.
But I get that. But yeah, like, the Doctor doesn't like guns. That is a thing.
That is. I mean, and that ties, like, to my, when I was like, whoa. I actually went, whoa, when he pulled the gun out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember, like, say what you will about what's it called? The last two-parter, the David Tennant send-off.
Mm-hmm.
With the Time Lords coming back.
Yeah.
You know, with, actually, that moment he hears the Time Lords are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's sitting on the spaceship with Donna's father,
mm-hmm.
Or granddad. Granddad.
Yeah.
And you know, talking about the guns, and the Doctor doesn't like to use guns and so on. Mm-hmm. And they're talking, like, just, like, about how he's on the run and everything. And at that moment, the moment he hears the Time Lords coming back, he grabs the gun. And it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to be like, oh, crap. The Doctor never uses guns because he never feels the need to.
Mm-hmm.
He's so frightened now. And he's talking about, like, how guns are just a tool for people who are really frightened and cowards.
Yeah.
Who can't use their minds. And he does it. And it just shows, like, wow, that means something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing with this one. That when he did it the first time, I was like, whoa. And I objected to it only because, like, is this guy as bad as all that? You know, mm-hmm. like they didn't... And that... This is, I kind of feel like, look, Doctor, you've met people who are far worse than this guy.
Well, I think the important thing with this episode was that it was more, the Doctor was whatever was going on with this guy was more about the Doctor being kind of running from his own issues.
And actually, you know what? This is a pro I forgot to mention. Mm-hmm. That they actually, in the other Alien Doctor, in Jax, they actually did create a kind of, like, mirror image. Like, mm-hmm. like you know, the exact same thing that this guy did, the Doctors pulled off. Like, for, way yeah. back when, it was, all the way up to Eccleston, which is, during a war, he did something that cost a lot of people's lives. We're still not sure what the Doctor did.
Yeah.
To time lock the event, but he did something. At great cost himself, and now he's sort of running away from it mm-hmm. and having adventures.
I think, like, yeah, you know, the line, there's a line in there in this week's episode about how, you know, my prison is my past, your prison is your morality.
Right.
And the thing about that line, though, is that the Doctor's prison is also his past.
Right.
The Doctor has lots of prisons.
It's true. It's completely true. And actually, it was, like, the prison, it was that prison line that
beat yeah.
him off.
I think it's easy to, yeah, the alien doctor was not like the worst creature we've ever seen on this show.
Right.
But it was I didn't question why the Doctor would be reacting so strongly, because it was clear that they were setting it up that it was the Doctor reacting to a mirror of himself.
Right.
And not liking it.
Yeah, it was more of like he used the gun. That's so out of character. Now, this might tie into speculation, which we'll get into. Mm-hmm. I think my other con with this was, it's tied to the same thing almost, the stakes. I was just like, really? I mean, his solution to the guy at the end, to the problem in the end, did not feel very, we're talking about their big screen moments, it didn't feel very big screen.
Yeah, and it kind of, you know, like, it as far as dramatic climaxes go, a character deciding that he should just kill himself as the resolution of the entire episode's problem is far from, you know, the most compelling solution to a situation.
It's true, but
I mean, it was a good moment.
It was a good moment, and there's been the discussions, particularly around the Doctor's mirror, that might touch on that.
Mm.
But there, the big thing for me was, like, you have a bunch of, and you know what? You said something interesting. I thought that would have been a more interesting episode when you did the summary. You said, like, oh, the townspeople paint that symbol on the guy's face mm-hmm. and to confuse him.
Right.
But the towns, only like one or two of them did. I think it was only the boy. Most of them hold themselves up in the church.
Most of them were in the church, but there were a few, I think. There were like at least three or four.
No, my impression was there was just like two of them or so.
All right.
But here's my point.
Gentle listeners, please go through the episode and count how many dudes.
Yeah, I'm underestimating it, but it would have been an interesting episode for me if there had been a lot of them, and also with a statement like, no, he's one of us now, you know, you're really forcing this, because the cyborg goes at great pains not to hurt people.
Yeah, I feel like, I think the issue, like, is there's no scene where the town decides to rally around the alien doctor.
Right.
And I think that's the issue. And I think also, like, maybe that's what's missing from the final bit, which is like the doc, you know, it's like, you know, if the town, if there had been this really strong moment of the town rallying around the alien doctor could be so touched by that he's like, I can't do this to these people anymore.
Right, exactly.
And like that's the moment that would have sold him his decision to go blow himself up.
I hate saying this, but it's that Russell T. Davies moment that would have done it. That was the kind of thing that he would have pulled off.
Russell, we kind of miss you.
Yeah, but it's that emotional connection as opposed to a series of events.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this episode was not without emotion.
I mean, apart from the intense scenes, and I'll give this to, like, the Karen Gillian and Matt Smith, is like, that was the moment where I'm like, oh, great, Amy's back. And then Amy goes away for the rest of the episode. Yeah. Literally goes away. There is nothing that she does for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, but there was, maybe there was stuff that was cut out. Who knows?
Who knows? It's true.
But, as is, I mean, it was,
like, did she do anything in the last bit?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Exactly.
People, if you remember what Amy was doing for the last 10 minutes of that episode, let us know.
Rory was doing something, and that he was also wearing, he was wearing the makeup and running around town. But yeah.
Amy is a delicate flower and cannot be exposed to such things.
Oh.
Hey, look! It's
the she's a mother now.
Yes.
As mentioned in this episode.
That's right, we talked about how she was a mother. Because, God forbid, you be anything else.
I can tell. Because...
This concludes Liz's bitchy feminist moment of the week.
Wow.
I'm glad we fit that in.
Not a Doctor Who episode.
Okay, speculation. My speculation is all based, I feel like, you know, we're coming closer and closer to discussing the Doctor's morality and what the Doctor's been through and how that's changed him. I think that's the theme. That's definitely a theme of what we're dealing with here. I think my big point of speculation that I'm interested in discussing is the basic fact that, you know, we're going to have an entire episode next week that's devoted to pawns and what the pawns are up to and what they do with their lives while they're not traveling with the Doctor. And I'm actually really, really excited to see if that pulls together these first three episodes and makes them, kind of puts them in context.
Oh, that'd be kind of interesting if they actually showed you, well, here's what happened in the last three episodes, but completely from the perspective of the pawns, like, in between bits, where they see this Doctor keeps coming in darker and darker, or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's going to be a standalone adventure, but if there's, like, even just some quick montage of the Doctor popping in and out, like, as...
Well, that's supposed to be what Pawn Life was about, but...
Yeah, well...
That went out well.
Well, I mean, Pawn Life was a prequel.
That's right.
Like, if they do Pawn Life, but for the first three episodes, I think that'll be really strong. So we'll see. But I almost kind of, like, want to wait until I watch next week's episode before I really speculate about the pawns and how they fit into this season.
See, I'm wondering... See, it was Frank's comment regarding the Doctor becoming a Dalek, mm-hmm. or having been infected with a Dalek.
Right.
I'm not convinced this is the actual thing, but it's an interesting speculation here, which is, leaving aside the whole spinny thing, because I was like, well, we've seen him spin around. It's that kind of
character. He does like to spin.
He does.
He's a twirler.
Yeah, he's a twirler. But one of he likes to show off his moments. In fact, more so than David Tennant, Matt Smith's Doctor likes to show off when he's being clever in some bits.
Yeah.
So what if the Doctor has been infected by the nanocloud, and it's him who's giving, like, it's now giving, like, it's giving this rage within him.
Mm-hmm.
What if that's why he's like, no, these final solutions don't work anymore. It's what, I'm not sure it's like, it's a virtual reality in his head kind of thing. I'm wondering if it's just, no, he's infected.
Mm-hmm.
He can erase his own history now from various things. Mm-hmm.
Also, he's supposed to be dead.
Say again?
Also, he's supposed to be dead.
The Doctor?
Yeah, remember how he's supposed to be dead?
Yeah, he's supposed to be dead.
Yeah, also he's supposed to be
but
dead.
But now he can actually do that by okay, well, I can, using Dalek technology, I can erase data about myself wherever it may appear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's stuff like that. That's an interesting possibility. I'm just not convinced yet that's actually the main theme. Mostly because every time I think that, I'm going to hate saying this, but every time I think they're going to have to do something clever, we get the Wedding of River Song, you know, for the solution of the.
They made a Doctor size shaped spaceship, and then they that's what she shot. And,
yeah.
Oh dear, sometimes I forget about that.
Yeah.
And then I'm happy, and then I remember that happened.
You know, you're waiting for another thing I'm gonna hate is I feel like Moffat and crew have set themselves up because the Pandorica opens was such a clever. Oh, look how the Doctor manipulated things to be to win the day.
Right.
That when we got the Wedding of River Song, you know, like the way he escaped out of that one, like, really?
Like the Big Bang has like 8 or 10 twists and turns to it.
Yeah.
That episode's great. I should rewatch that. I think we'll see what happens. Like, I think they are whenever a show gives does the whole big, like, standalone speech where he's like, we're going to be more standalone this season. I always, like, instinctually resist trying to connect things together because it's like, I'm just like, because I guess I trust Moffat.
Right.
That's my fault, gentle listener. Don't make my mistakes. Let's look at what some of I think some other folk have been saying. Charlie Flowers comments on the Twitters that it was nice to see a genuinely angry, tormented doctor again. I also love the horse and the Three Amigos-esque escape plan bit.
Yes.
Yes, nothing like a transgendered horse and nothing like a transgendered horse and a homage to the Three Amigos to really bring an episode together. On Facebook, Hubert Motley Jr., our friend Grunk, writes, "I always enjoy Toby Whitehouse's writing. What episodes? What other episodes do you do?"
Can't recall off the top of my head, but yes.
Okay, Ree's gonna look this up while I read this comment. I always enjoy Toby Whitehouse's writing. Now that we know this is 1,200-year-old doctor, we know why he's being so erratic colder. I'm still not sure why the pawns are there. It was great seeing Browder on TV again. I would love for them to check in on said town called Mercy in the 21st century, because seeing the gunslinger still there guarding the place would be kind of cool. I did actually like that coda. Like, I mean, the great, you know, great granddaughter thing aside, I did enjoy having, like, the idea of, like, an ever-present cyborg ever-present cyborg sheriff.
Right.
Marshall. He's an elected official.
As for Toby Whitehouse, he wrote The God Complex, which is the hotel with the Minotaur.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote the first, seventh episode of Torchwood, Greeks Bearing Gifts, and he's the creator of Being Human.
Oh, Greeks Bearing Gifts is one of those good Torchwood episodes.
And, of course, he wrote School Reunion.
Oh, he wrote School Reunion! Oh, I love School Reunion. That episode's great.
Single tear.
Sarah Jane. Our friend Scott Ewell wrote, "I like the show, but not all that excited by it. I'm overdosed on cowboy Old West stuff, living in Colorado and all. To me, it was a good mashup of Western sci-fi. Same thing about him being alone too long has having changed him. Is getting old for me. The preview of next week's was odd. Not sure what to expect." Which is fair. I feel like... Even more so than the final episode of this fall season, I think next week's episode is going to be really... Hopefully next week's episode is really important and really good and really brings the whole... really brings the room together. A really good rug.
Yeah, I hope so. It's... I hope it has tinges of the Lodger in it.
Lodger... I hope it has bits of the Lodger in it, but I also hope it makes this show make sense, because the Lodger
why are you setting expectations so high? Are you gonna set yourself up for disappointment?
I'm probably setting myself up for disappointment. Chris Chibnall did write it.
Aww.
No, but dinosaurs
in the spaceship.
Yes, I'm getting over my Chris Chibnall my Chris Chibnall issues. I'm working them out with you, gentle listener, right here, and with Rudy as well. Rudy is also here. And the cat. The cat's here. She's very exhausted by all this heat. It's very hot, you guys. It's so warm. It's not pleasant.
None at all.
But yeah, so finally, as kind of an homage to we were setting up the agenda for today. We're like, oh man, we missed the Stephen Moffat tweet of the week. So we were like, what, maybe we can find someone else's tweet of the week to follow. And so we went to we started looking, and then we found Karen Gillan, if you did not know, has a Twitter account. So here's the Karen Gillan tweet of the week.
Yay!
Heading to Radio 1 today and then on the One Show tonight. Tune in. I've got blue boots.
This is why we miss Stephen Moffat.
Stephen Moffat, we understand that people were kind of mad at you and were kind of saying nasty things about you. And some of which may or may not be deserved, some of which may or may not have been us. But if you wanted to come back to Twitter, we'd be cool with that.
Yeah. Please feed the machine. Feed the machine.
Come back to Twitter so we can spend 5 minutes every week mocking your tweets.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Stephen Moffat. But yeah, that's it for today. If you would like to tell us what you think, which you should, because I'm sure it is at least twice as coherent as we are this morning. It's so hot, you guys.
So hot.
So hot. But if you want to tell us what you think, with your less, perhaps more, better air conditioned minds, you can find us on Twitter at TimeyWimeyTV. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TimeyWimeyTV. You can find us on Google Plus by searching for us in the search bar or going to our blog page, which is at timeywimey.tv, and clicking the link there. You can also email us at feedback@timeywimeytv.
Subscribe to us in your favorite readers. iTunes is a dream. We will be back at some point.
It's our long national nightmare.
Yes, it is. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week.
For the power of three.
The power of three.
Bye, all.
Bye.